Our guest today is the Songbird of the South, who is appearing at the Mill Run Theater in Niles this week through Sunday. Of course, we're talking about Miss Kate Smith. Welcome to Chicago.
Well, thank you, Chuck. It's awfully nice being here. I come to Chicago every once in a while to make an appearance, and I always enjoy getting back here to your great windy city.
When was the last time you blew into our windy
city? Oh, I was here 2 weeks ago, Chuck. I flew in on a Monday, and I gave a concert at the big hotel downtown for the Mortgage Bankers Association on a Tuesday evening, and then I had to fly out the next day on Wednesday. So I was here just 2 weeks ago.
Well, you're making a smash with your appearance at the Mill Run these days.
Oh,
we were there for opening, and it was a magnificent show.
Oh, Chuck, I'm so glad you liked it, you and your wife. I had a lovely evening last night because we just did open last night. I don't know when you're going to use the tape, but anyhow, it was a thrilling opening, truly. Everybody was in such a marvelous, festive sort of mood. It was beyond being a mood of merriment. It was really festive. This is my way of expressing that everybody's having a grand time, and that's just what we were all doing. All of us on stage, and it looked like all of
everyone
you in
the
audience.
Yeah, the magic moment was, I couldn't believe it. There I was, standing up, singing at the top of my voice, God Bless America, with, you know, I don't know how many thousand people are there, and Kate Smith, too. Unbelievable.
All of us together.
All
wasn't
of
it
us,
beautiful?
Magnificent.
Oh,
moment.
Everyone. And they just sang at the top of their voices.
It was
beautiful.
It was nice.
And I saw a few tears in folks' eyes, too, so they felt like I do when I sing it. I have such great love for my country, and I'm just trying to get it across to have people realize how fortunate we really and truly are to be Americans and have the freedoms and all the great things that God has blessed our country with.
You have a great love affair with your public, with your audience.
Yes.
And they with you, I think.
Oh, that's good, because I always say you've got to give love to get it back in return. And this is it's very easy for me to do, and I've done it all my life, and I've been well repaid, believe me, Chuck.
When did it all start for Kate Smith?
Well, professionally, it was in 1927, I made my first professional appearance in New York City. I had just entered pre-med school at George Washington University. I was going to be a doctor. That's what my family wanted me to be. And I got a call. There had been a theatrical scout had been around Washington. I didn't know anything about it, of course, but he had heard me perform as an amateur there. And he was getting ready to go into in a big Broadway show called Honeymoon Lane. And he heard me sing, and so he contacted my father and asked if there were a possibility of my coming to New York and trying out for the show. He said that he definitely had a part for me, and after hearing me sing, he wanted me in the show. Well, I had to plead with my father because he did not want me to leave medical school and just go flying off someplace, not know what was going to happen. So my mother went to New York with me, and I will cut it short because we don't want to make this too dragged out. I appeared in the show, and the show was a tremendous success. And that, incidentally, was the first time that I ever came to Chicago. Mm-hmm. When we finished our New York run, which was a year and a half, then we went on the road for a year, and we were here 9 months in Chicago with that show.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. And that was my first visit in about 1929. I was here.
Remember
with that
the
show.
Theater? Remember where that played?
I don't want to hold up here just
no,
in silence
fine.
Trying
we,
to think what the theater was.
Silent pauses for memories.
Oh, no. No, I can't remember. I can't remember the theater. We were also we went to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. We went to the various big cities. And it ran for a year on the road, and then it disbanded. And I went home, came back about 6 months later, got a call from George White, and he wanted me in another big Broadway show. So my father said, I don't know whether I think you should go or not. I said, well, Dad, look, I'll try this one. If it becomes too long, I'll stop. Well, it was while I was in that show, while it was in New York, that I met Mr. Collins, Ted Collins, God rest his soul. And he was the head recorder in charge of all the recordings for Columbia Records. And he wanted me to make Columbia Records for them. So I had an appointment. He made an appointment with me, and I went, and we had a long talk, and I started making records for him. And he then, in 1931, he took some of my records to Mr. William Paley, who was then the president of CBS Network. He owned it, had just bought it, and a young man at the time. And after he heard my records, he said, I'll put that lady, that young lady, on any time you want her to go on radio. And that's how it's all started. Then I said, Mr. Collins asked me if I had a manager. I said, no, I don't. By then he knew it. I didn't have an agent. And so he said, well, how about me managing your affairs? And I said, it's all right with me, perfectly all right. So he did start to handle my, he became my manager and handling everything. And he then we set up the time to go on May 1st, 1931, at 7 o'clock, three nights a week, against Amos and Andy, who were on NBC at the time, and we were on CBS. And that's how I got into radio.
Boy, that's a whirlwind
Wasn't that a whirlwind thing, the way it happened from 27 to 31?
Wow, in just that 4 years. Of course, you see, the one essential ingredient was there. It was talent.
Well, thank you. You've got to have something.
Yeah.
Or you certainly can't last for 44 years, and that's what my anniversary was this past May the 1st. I've been in just in radio for, you know, since I started professionally in radio, was 44 years. But in another couple of years, I will have been in my business 50 years, because it was in 27
That's right.
I started, you see. That's a long time when you think of it. By golly, I'm giving my age away here, Chuck.
Seems just like yesterday, though, doesn't it?
Well, it sure... Not quite. A lot of water has gone under the bridge. Or some folks say over the dam.
Yeah. Were you this, known as the Songbird of the South before the radio?
Yes. That was a title that I took when I first came to New York. They gave it to me in the show. And I've never been able to get away from it. It's the Songbird of the South. To me, it's so corny now. I don't know.
Well, you're not. We don't use it now, except
you know,
me
it's just,
when I
yes, but I mean, it does. It has stuck to me, Chuck.
Well, you're from the South.
Yes, I was born in Virginia and raised and schooled in Washington, D.C., and have lived in New York for 47, 48 years. And I maintain a residence in the city proper on the east side of New York, and I have built myself a home up in the Adirondacks in Lake Placid, New York, about 42 years ago. And I try to be there in the summertime. When I have a little time off, I go there to my home there.
Let's back up to 1931 when you were you first got on CBS opposite Amos and Andy. Well, now, what the heck was that? Amos and Andy, everybody was listening to them.
That must
have been a challenge for you.
Yes, it was a challenge, but I was so young then, Chuck, that nothing was a challenge for me. Mm-hmm. You know how fresh kids are when I don't care who they are. I always had great confidence in myself in what I was doing because I had started young in singing around Washington, as I say, as an amateur, and so I knew the public, and I had seen the response to my efforts as a youngster, and I thought, well, I must have some. The people like it. They enjoy it. So I always had that feeling that I had learned later, of course, that I had a good rapport with the audience, and the response was very beautiful. I had thousands of letters, and after I started in radio, and I knew then that I was going to go, that I was established. I had already established myself, and I was very happy. And I've always had that deep concern about my audiences, listening and viewing. I have always kept my shows top rank, as they say, in not allowing anything blue on any of them. I will not stand for that. And I'm sure you noticed last night the show you saw could be seen by little children, it could be seen by middle-aged people or elderly folks, senior citizens. They never have to worry about being offended by anything by watching or listening to my shows. This is something that I will not stand for.
Well, I think that kind of quality goes with the name Kate Smith. When you think of entertainment by Kate Smith, you know that you're getting first-class family.
That's right. That's right. That's what I've always done. And I just won't allow it. That's all. I even put one performer off my show, one of my television shows, right in the middle of his performance. He had rehearsed and done his stint for us in the afternoon. And then when he got on the air, he pulled an off-color joke. And I just went right over and took him right off the stage.
I bet you could do it, too.
And I said, I told the audience, I had my camera come to me, and I said, I apologized profusely. I explained everything to them. And I said, that man will never, ever appear on another show of mine as long as I live and as long as I have one. And he never has.
Weren't you, I know you had great confidence when you were pitted against Amos and Andy.
Yes.
But weren't you just a little bit nervous about
no,
it
sir.
All?
No, sir. No, sir. Not at all, Chuck. I had confidence in myself. And that's what's needed, no matter who your competition is, no matter what field it's in. If you have the confidence, self-confidence in yourself, and you know that you are giving your best, and your best is being accepted, there's nothing to worry about. This applies in every field of endeavor in life.
Exactly right. That's
right.
Good advice
right.
for anybody
Absolutely.
At any time.
Yeah. If you falter in your own belief, then you're not going to make it. I don't care whether you're an executive in business, whether you're the president of the United States, no matter what. You've got to have self-confidence and believe in yourself. This way you can prove your worth.
Now, what kind of confidence did CBS have in you, though? Did they give you a
They gave me the whole. No,
what?
They gave me a carte blanche. I could do what I wanted to do, and they were so happy about it. After a month, they put it on 5 times a week instead of 3 times a week, because they were making great inroads into the opposition network, and so they put it on 5 times a week. And within, I think I told you, within a couple of months, I had a wonderful sponsor, and for the whole time that I remained in radio, I have not been commercially in radio for quite a number of years now. But as long as I was never without a sponsor, a big sponsor, a well-paying sponsor. And this is something that I'm not proud of anything. I'm happy, always happy about things happening. But when I had my television show starting, I was on 5 days a week every day for 7 years with a TV hour. And I was never without a sponsor. As a matter of fact, I can truthfully say, because it was told to me by the top echelon of the network, which happened to have been NBC at the time with the television show. It was always NBC that sponsored my series. We had a waiting list of over 80 sponsors always waiting to buy 15 minutes of time on our show. And we were in the position where we were earning for our network $3.5 million every 39 weeks.
Oh, boy.
So you see, that's why we had all those waiting sponsors waiting, right, waiting to get on our show.
Who was your first sponsor?
You mean on radio?
On radio.
Oh, that's easy. The Congress Cigar Company.
The Congress Cigar Company.
In Philadelphia. And they sold tobacco, and they also sold mostly tobacco and cigars. And I had Lopalina cigars, the Congress Company's cigars. And that was funny, because here I was. I don't smoke. I never smoked even, never tried.
Not a cigar, especially.
Certainly not a cigar, but not a cigarette either. But here I was, my very first sponsor being a cigar company. I just, I couldn't believe it. But anyhow, it was very successful. I was on with them for 3 years.
And then?
And then I went with A&P.
A&P.
I had A&P coffees, all of their coffees. 8 o'clock, Red Circle, Bokar. I think that was the three of them. And I was on with A&P for about 6 years. And then I got an automobile sponsor. Hudson Terraplane was the name of the cars that I sold. And then after that, I was with them a couple of years. Then I went with General Foods. And then I remained with General Foods for 24 years. That was a magnificent association. It was just beautiful, beautiful. And needless to say, Chuck, you know what they had me selling? Food.
Food.
Cakes, Calumet, Swan's Down, the Sirtot, the gels, the jelly and jams, the jam. and grape nuts, coffee, Jell-O. Oh, I sold everything for them, but mainly cakes.
Well, the cakes.
I could always sell food, Chuck. I guess it was my fat, me looking so fat and happy, I've always been able to sell food.
When you started with your 15-minute radio show, was that a live show that you would do with the?
You mean in the beginning?
Way in the beginning.
Oh yes.
I keep going back to the beginning.
Right at the beginning. Yeah. Oh, that was for years, yeah. Chuck. We did it live. Uh-huh. Why? I did all of my television shows live.
That's right.
Sure. Then when I got the night radio show, I had to go on twice a night in New York. I had to go on from 8 to 9 mm-hmm. for New York. Then I had to wait at the theater and go on from 12 midnight to 1 so they'd get it on the Pacific Coast from 8 to 9,
Nine
so we had to do it twice a night. We did it 8 to 9 and 12 to 1. And they were all live, and so were all the television shows until just the last, we'll say maybe 10 years, 12 years they've been taping. It's practically, it's all taped now. The only one that's on now live is Cosell, Howard mm-hmm. Cosell. And I think that because they haven't been doing it live for so long that I've, as an observer as well as a performer, I see how nervous it makes them. Not me, because I did it for so many years live every single day. When mistakes were made, they went out on the air just as they were done over
the
tube.
That adds to the rapport between the performer and the audience,
definitely.
I think. If somebody, shows nobody's perfect and everybody's
That's right,
in together,
and this is the
know?
Way I used to love it. Now, they do get a perfect show by taping it.
Yeah.
There'll never be mistakes. And because they can do it over and over if they have to, as many times as they have to get it perfect.
Well, you had some perfect shows when you were doing that 1 hour at night, repeating for the West
That's
Coast
right.
over there. That's when I believe you finally, I shouldn't say finally, but at that period of time, you made the top 10 radio shows in the country, and you...
Consistently.
Right, and you
consistently.
Brought so much quality entertainment to the radio audience.
That was our purpose. We wanted to give the very best that we could get. We got the top names of every division of the entertainment industry. We got the top names in motion pictures, in the theater, the dramatics, vaudeville, every single type, radio, every type of entertainment, we went the entire field to bring the best to our audiences. And we had the best.
And not only did you bring the established stars, but you made some stars.
Yes, we did.
Radio,
we made made quite a few. We made Abbott and Costello. We made Henny Youngman. A lot of people we brought to radio that had only been in the theater, such as Helen Menken. Such as, we had Henry Aldridge, remember, Coming Mother,
yes.
And we started them. And we started Charlie Ruggles in a series for his radio. We created that, you may have remembered or heard, speak of the It Pays to Be Ignorant bunch.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
We created that. That was...
Tom Howard, George Shelton,
mm-hmm. Lulu McConnell, and Harry McNaughton.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I could give you a big list. I'm very, very happy about that.
I read somewhere along the line that as a warm up announcer for one of your series, you had a young fellow who stands in Atlantic City every year now.
Bert Parks. We had Bert. He was out there every evening warming up the audience. I'll tell you who else we had. We had, wait a minute, give me a chance. It was right on the tip of my tongue. It'll come to me again. We won't wait. Let's go on. But Bert Parks was with us for years. He's just the same today as he was then. Full of pep, he's great.
Your manager then, Ted Collins, was with you from the very
1930,
beginning.
1930, I met Ted, and he started me. See, I met him while I was in the show, second show, which was Flying High. Mm-hmm. The first was Honeymoon Lane, the second was Flying High. And that's when I met Ted in 1930, and then we started together. We formed our own company in 1931, and we were together until he had a massive heart attack in May of 1964, and we had been together almost, well, we were in the 34th year together as business partners and artist and manager, so forth, representative, and we formed our company in 1931, and he had two bad heart attacks before the fatal one, and he was always saying to me, now, if and when it happens again, if you wish to retire, you can. If you want to go on and carry on our company, we were the two executives, president and vice president. He said, you can do so. And he gave me the name of a couple of businessmen that he had talked to at great length about the company in case he passed away. And so anyhow, I, out of respect to his memory, I stayed away from the entertainment field for 6 months. Then on Christmas, I came back again and started, and I said, I'm going to keep the company going. So I have, fortunately, enough of Ted's knowledge rubbed off on me in those years, 34 years, to be able to keep my company going. And I've had it going now since his passing in 11 years, and I'm happy that I still have it going.
Too. We're happy.
Well, I would still be working, but I could have I could dissolve my company. But I didn't. But he also named a young man as successor as a manager if I wanted to continue, and that was Raymond Katz, or better known today as Ray Katz Enterprises and so forth. And Ray works exactly like Ted did. He handles an artist exactly like Ted did. Of course, Ted had one artist. That was me. Now, Ray Katz, he has many top names in the field today. Just to name a few, he has Anthony Newley, he has Mac Davis, he has the Osmond Brothers, he has Paul Lynn, myself, Joan Rivers, there's so many.
They are all in pretty good company.
Yeah, he has an awful lot of names that he handles, a lot of them.
Ted shared a lot of radio and... Well, I guess not on the air television hours with you, but many he was on radio in a great
much, right, much, right. Much he was my time. Announcer and producer for all of my shows, radio and television, and we were also in a lot of sports enterprises together. We have always I've been a great sports enthusiast, and so was he. As a matter of fact, a lot of people don't realize it, but we owned in the National Football League the New York Yanks professional football team in New York. They we were there 7 years. Then we sold the franchise to Dallas. Dallas dropped it, and Baltimore picked it up, and they became the Baltimore Colts. Now, we also had originally in the 30s, we owned the championship Celtics basketball team, which consisted of Joe Lapchick, who later became the head coach of St. John's University in New York, and Dutch Dennett, Davy Banks. And on our football team, we had a couple of sensational quarterbacks, George Radiman and Bobby Lane. And we have been associated with sports, and that's why I am always so interested in various... I'm a professional football nut, and but even ahead of that, I am crazy about ice hockey. And, of course, you've heard of my association with the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yes.
And... I kind of feel that they might get their third Stanley Cup this year. Now, I'm not putting any other team down, but I'm just keeping my fingers crossed because they've gotten it 2 years, and I'd like to see them get it a third time, and then I'd like to see it go elsewhere.
Kate Smith, I can't tell you how much of a pleasure it's been for us to visit with you. I have two questions yet to ask you.
You have, Chuck. Go ahead.
First is, when is the first time you sang God Bless America?
November the 11th, 1938, on Armistice Day, which is now known as Veterans Day.
Right. That's and what I introduced. About how many times have you sung it?
That I can't answer. That I could
about
never
97
answer.
97 million times.
I don't know, Chuck. I wouldn't even offer an estimate. I can't estimate the number of times, really.
You
because
had
I've done
a
it so
hand
much.
In writing your theme song, When the Moon Comes Over the Mountain, didn't you?
Well, you know, I wrote the lyric of that.
You wrote the lyric?
Yep. Pardon me, I'm kind of an amateur poetry writer and have been practically all my life. And so I wrote this little poem down in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And then when we decided to go on the air, Ted had Harry Wood write the melody to it. And that's how we happen to use simple, very simple little thing that everybody can sing.
Beautiful melody for a beautiful lady.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You always signed off your radio program with...
thanks for listening, and goodbye, folks.
And we say thanks for broadcasting.
Thank you, Chuck. It's been a joy.